On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, you get up in the morning and you have your coffee, or in my case, decaf, and don't bother with the emails about, oh, Bob, decaf. You know, it's either I drink decaf or I drink caffeine, and then I'm not doing the show. I'm in the hospital, so no snarky decaf comments, please. But you get up in the morning and you're sitting there with your coffee or your decaf and getting the day started, and you think you know what the program's going to be. You got a sense for where maybe the program should be going on a given evening. Especially an evening like this that is, after all, prayer meeting. It's just the same. It's the very same thing as prayer meeting, only there are snakes and strychnine involved. And then along comes a jackass like Donald Trump and sends everything plumb sideways. It's getting weird out there. I know where the show's going to go. I don't want it to go there. You probably don't want it to go there either. It'll probably involve me saying some things I've said before, and I'll get an email saying, Bob, is this a rerun? But it isn't. This is as live can be. It is the 27th day of April. I was just sitting there minding my own business, enjoying watching the idiots over in England, the for-profit media idiots over in England for that thing in England. And it all goes sideways. Just straight to hell. I don't know. Is there a baseball game on? Let's all go watch a baseball game. It's embarrassing. It's disgusting. It's annoying. All at the same time. When they announced somewhere before the 9 o'clock hour that the President of the United States was going to have a brief statement regarding the fact that he had finally released his long-form birth certificate, my heart sank. My stomach flipped, turned. And I thought, oh no, that's a joke. He's not really going to stoop to their level, is he? But he did. Out of the purest of motives. Out of a simple desire to put an issue to bed that should never have gotten out of bed in the first place, Barack Obama instructed his counsel to fly personally to Hawaii, sought a dispensation of existing rules in Hawaii so as to have a copy of the long-form birth certificate so that he could turn it in or release it to the American people in the hopes that this dumbass, ignorant, stupid non-troversy would go the hell away. The intent is admirable, if nothing else. They badgered, the right wing badgered and bullied bullying's what right what pig lickings do best. Our poor president of the United States into proving something that had already been proven, and to do so announcing that he hoped this would all just go away now. Never for a moment realizing that this has nothing to do with his birth certificate. This has nothing to do with where he was born. This has everything in the world to do with the fact that he was born, and that he was born with the wrong skin tone. You understand that, and I understand that. At the White House, where they deal in ideas of political good faith and people sitting down as, because we're all Americans here, and we all want the best for America, you know, when you begin from a false premise like that, you're doomed. Because, you see, the Republican Party does not want the best for America. The Republican Party wants the best for the Republican Party. And so we find ourselves... President Obama made reference to the fact that there was a media circus. And to a certain extent, he called out the for-profit media, saying, you know, if I was coming out here to talk about national security, you guys would not break coverage. But by God, if I'm going to talk about the birth certificate, well, there you are. This has been a sad day for America. This has been a heartbreaking day for America. You know, there's other stuff that's real news out there in America and beyond. Did you catch the story about the Afghan pilot? Yeah, I mean, on the heels of how many Taliban prisoners escaping from the Stalag Petraeus? On the heels of that news, a disgruntled Afghan pilot, whom we had taught to fly things, a disgruntled Afghan pilot turned a machine gun on a number of Allied coalition troops. He killed 8 of them. Gunned them down in cold blood. At first it was put out as a friendly fire incident, but friendly fire is such a disgusting term, especially in light of ordeals like that of the Tillman family. Friendly fire went away pretty quick. The coverage I saw was at the LA Times. And it was just another one of those moments where you're left asking yourself, and were there why? Still? 9 Americans killed. This is mind-boggling. 9 Americans killed when Afghan pilot opens fire at Kabul airport. Subhead: the Taliban claims responsibility for the attack in which 8 U.S. troops and an American contractor, read mercenary, are killed. The gunman dies when NATO's forces return fire. 8 U.S. troops and an American contractor, read mercenary, were killed early Wednesday when a veteran Afghan military pilot opened fire on trainers during a meeting in a military compound near Kabul International Airport. the Taliban quickly claimed responsibility. This is the story filed by Molly Hennessy Fisk of the LA Times. The details are just weird. The pilot began shooting during a meeting in the operations room of the Afghan National Army Air Corps building about 10 a.m. after having an argument with a foreign colleague targeting foreign instructors and advisors, according to statements released by NATO and Afghan officials. Now, this comes amidst a call from Pakistan to dump the U.S. and ally itself for Afghanistan to ally itself with Pakistan and their buddy, China. Afghan security forces heard the shots and surrounded the building, storming inside even as other officers leapt from the building's second floor. According to Colonel Bahadur, the Afghan Army spokesman at the airport who goes by one name, you know, kind of like Gaga or Madonna, Bahadur, none of the Afghan personnel died in the attack. A NATO soldier and five Afghan Air Force troops were wounded in the gunfight as well. All those killed were Americans. The pilot's name was Ahmad Gul Sahebi from the Tarakail district of Kabul. He's been in the Afghan army for decades, according to a man who claimed to be his brother. His brother said, "My brother was a little depressed recently, but he had served with Afghanistan's National Army for 20 years. He loved his country and his people. He was a good man." On the other hand, and, you know, it's up to you to believe who you wish to believe. On the other hand, there's the Taliban account, which says that the shooter was named Azizullah, an insurgent from Kabul's conservative Arzan Kemat neighborhood on the city's outskirts, who posed as a pilot with help from Afghan security forces and died when he ran out of bullets. Taliban spokesman Zabiullah Mujahid said that the Afghan Air Force Corps officers fully helped the suicide attacker to get in and start shooting. He went on and said, "This attack indicates that we can access any security forces facilities of the enemy we want. We have our infiltrators in all sections." Pretty big story, right? Just saying. I mean, there's a lot of real room for journalism and inquiry and all that stuff that the for-profit media is supposed to be all so all-fired professionally good at, right? As of the announcement that Barack Obama was going to release his long-form birth certificate, that story died. Just went away. Gone. What? Who? Where? Huh? Eight American soldiers? Gunned down in cold blood by an Afghan pilot? Really? Not interested. Spike it. The Kenyan Muslim's gonna come out. You know, the one with the deep-seated hatred for colonialism, and he's gonna finally release his long-form birth certificate. If ever there was a day in which we saw once and for all what a useless, miserable, pathetic, revolting, repugnant, disgusting failure the for-profit media are, today's the day. Put a little pond scum colored star on today's date on the calendar, would you? There was coverage that, you know, there's another story out today that we're having a little shuffle in the cabinet. Robert Gates wants, Defense Secretary Robert Gates wants to spend more time with his family. So he is finally leaving the post of Secretary of Defense. Which leaves a hole there, which has been filled by the appointment of Leon Panetta, who was the head of the CIA. That's becoming a trend, by the way, because under Poppy, George H.W. Bush, well, Robert Gates had been, what? Yeah, that's right, director of the CIA. At this point in time, at least from a leadership of the command and control flowchart standpoint, the line between the national security state covert action spy organization and the standing military of the United States is hopelessly blurred. Oh, but this was some 11-dimensional chess, you gotta admit. Because Panetta's going from CIA to SecDef. And, huh, why look, it's General David Petraeus again. Moving from Afghanistan into the post of head of the CIA. Doesn't that just say a boatload? That our professional military is now being run by the spooks? That story got spiked, too. With the announcement that one was finally going to release his birth certificate. Jesus, it was disgusting. I mean, 16 shades of revolting. I joked earlier that, you know, we'd all just sort of quit and go home. Maybe watch a baseball game or something. Somebody buy one of those little gallon and a half the mini kegs of beer, and we'll just sit around the tube and watch baseball and hope for the best. Hell, you can't even hardly watch baseball anymore without patronizing Rupert Murdoch. Fox owns access to that, too! Jesus. I mean, I feel like one of those hardcores that sit out in the cold at Lambeau Field with the little hard hat on that's got two or three cans of beer around it and four conjoined tubes that come down into one, and you just sit there and suck up the beer and make it all go away. But there's no help in that. There's no comfort in it. Cold comfort, really. Cold, frothy, malt-based, golden, frothy-headed comfort. Nowhere to run. Nowhere to hide. The craziness in the town halls is getting crazier, with the role of crazy now being played not by the attendees, but rather by the right-wingers standing up there trying to explain to people who are 58 years old and actually vote and hope someday in the very near future to collect Medicare, explaining to them, well, it'll be all right. We're only going to screw the people a decade behind you and everybody else. You're going to be fine. Paul Ryan telling attendees there who were hooting at him, the peanut gallery can just leave. There's no reason to be rude. You got the new meme there? People wearing tea bags hanging from cowboy hats while carrying deadly weapons into meetings is perfectly all right. But yelling liar at Paul Ryan, on the other hand, well, that's incivil, and those people just need to leave. And then there's Alan West. You know, Nicole Sandler does she fills in for Randy Rhodes a lot when Randy's gone. And she does her own show from, like, what, 10 in the morning, noon Eastern time, something like that? She showed up at an Alan West. You know Alan West, right? Alan West, the clown who told a gathering of the Friends of Jesus ladies. Well, he told them what America's real problem is. No, wait. You know, I do a little ancient history now, but I can't touch this. This is just too damn good.
The women in our campaign printed up T-shirts that said Women for West. That's what we need you to do.
Action.
We need you to come in and lock shields.
That's right.
And strengthen
That's
up the
right.
man that will go into the fight for you. Mm-hmm. To let these other women know on the other side, these Planned Parenthood women, the Code Pink women, and all of these women who, that have been neutering American men and bringing us to the point of this incredible weakness, to let them know that we are not going to have our men become subservient.
Amen.
That's what we need you to do. Because if you
we
don't
do it,
then the debt will continue to grow.
You clear on that now, ladies? You liberal women? Quit neutering your men. No, really, I said quit neutering your men. Code Pink has neutered all the liberal men. Planned Parenthood, you know, and I thought they just did like mammograms and pap smears and the occasional abortion, but apparently they're into orchiectomies as well. Come on now, honey, you don't need that those things anymore. Let's just go down to Planned Parenthood and plan for you not to have any more parenthood.
All right, dear. But Minnie, I don't want to go.
Yeah, the whole speech was just lunacy, but this guy's a loon anyway. This is a quote, we don't have the audio for it, but this is another quote from that speech. What made the Spartan men strong, it was the Spartan women. Because the Spartan women at the age of 9 gave up their male sons. God, I hate dumbasses. And this guy is a dumbass with a capital dumbass. I mean, this is a this guy's stupid with a capital th. Knows nothing about that ancient culture. Knows nothing about the brutality of it. He wants American right-wing, Jesus-loving, conservative women to lock shields like the Spartan ladies done. He knows nothing of the helot culture. He knows nothing of the fact that young Spartan soldiers were in Spartan boys, before they could ever become Spartan soldiers, were encouraged to go into the slave population and rape and kill at will to prove that they were brutish enough to do that to other people. One of the things that he cited was, he said, a Spartan woman turned to a Persian emissary and said, and this is his quote, "Persian, beware, for it is Spartan women who raise Spartan men." He did this in a lecture on ancient history. Ancient history apparently includes the year 2006 of the current era, what Alan West would call A.D. Because that's where that line comes from. 2006 and Zack Snyder's film 300. You know, this is Sparta! The one with the post-punk, highly pierced Xerxes. Right? Yeah. He specifically said that the Queen Gorgo said that to a Persian male emissary. If, however, you go back into Plutarch, you will find that the words are said to have been spoken and these are Plutarch's words, to some foreign woman. He also lauded the samurai culture of ancient Japan. Or not ancient, but... yeah. He said samurai leader Saigo Takamori died to protect the old way and to stand against the technology that was brought before them, the repeating rifles, the Gatling guns, and the cannons. But this dumbass really didn't realize that, in fact, at the Satsuma Rebellion, those very same Western firearms were used. By the people that Alan West said had rejected them. Well chumped, baby! Well chumped! But that's not all for Alan West. He had a town hall meeting outside of his own district, by the way, at a megachurch. I was talking about Nicole Sandler. She appeared. She said on her show that she was going to go, and she did. And she has been referred to as a heckler. She was arrested and put in the tank. She reports. She spoke to Tom Hartman today on his program, and she said, "I was kept in solitary." I was put in solitary like Bradley Manning. She said they left us in there for over an hour with no air circulation. Her and three others. So the guard shows up again. Nicole Sandler says, "Did you forget us?" And the guard says, "Yeah, that happens." He said, "You owe us an apology." He said, "Oh, yeah, I'm real sorry. You want an apology?" And he took her and he locked her in a little tiny cell with a toilet, a mattress, and a sink. No windows, four walls. And this is because she asked a question of her congressman, the aforesaid Spartan expert, Alan West. This is the audio. As usual, it's not as good as it could be. You don't have to make out necessarily all the hoots and hollers, but there is one part of Alan West's remarks that I hope you will pick up on.
A lot of very nasty things that were said tonight. If you have someone to say if they want to skin you alive, they put that on a blog. When you have people to take your social security number, your wife's employment identification number, and they put it on a mail piece and they mail it out to tens of thousands of homeowners. When you have people that incite protests outside of your campaign headquarters.
How about bullets and ballots?
They call you a misogynist.
How about ballots and bullets?
And when you ask someone that wants to be disruptive such as this.
I'm not being disruptive.
How about our
Medicare?
And I just say, when you have people that want to be
disruptive. Did you hear that question? How about ballots and bullets? You know what that means, right? Because one of his supporters during his political campaign advocated that if ballots don't work, bullets will. This is a guy who urged his own followers to intimidate his opponent. But that's okay. You'll hear some of the back and forth. Again, this was an Alan West town hall meeting held outside his district in a megachurch. With private security. Okay?
When you have people such as this, when you have individuals that want to mail a death threat letter to your office.
What's balance of books?
Shut up!
Listen to the knuckle draggers clap. The guy wasn't trying to intimidate him. All he was asking him was a straight-up question of his elected representative. But these teabag and wingnut horses' asses, well, they were spoiling for trouble. Of course, this is what they started 2 summers ago. But wait. If you missed it, he said, my responsibility here is very simple. And then the guy who dared to ask a question is removed from the room. And the knuckle walkers clap. Oh, this is going to be one of those. Okay, listen to the three things that matter. This is positively Zen.
Our responsibility here is very simple. At the end of every day, there are three things that I must have. And that is my honor, that is my character, and that is my integrity.
Aren't those three the same thing? Or has no one told Mr. Spartan History Expert that? His honor, his character, and his integrity. What about at the end of the day, having your constituents' best interests at heart, Congressman? Nope, didn't make the list. He's got all kinds of little jewelry on his lapel. Looks like one of them has wings or something on it. With wings! This is a guy who more or less got drummed out of the military, didn't he? Forced to resign, something like that, because of the intimidation tactics that he used against a prisoner of war. Yeah, this guy's a real sleazy gut bucket. But there's still something I want you to hear. Now, this is the same guy who says that his security clearance is higher than that of the President of the United States, okay? Not only is he a made-up Spartan history expert and a made-up Japanese samurai history expert. You know, we talked about made-up history experts a little bit last night on the program, didn't we? Well, he is cut from that same cloth. It doesn't matter if it's factual. It doesn't matter if it is accurate. It doesn't matter if it actually even happened in any colorable way, shape, form, or fashion. As long as he says it, it has to be true because he loves him some Jeebus. And he's knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, knee pad and elbow pad wearing, house helmet donning, oatmeal dribbling faithful. Well, they love them some Jeebus too. And that makes everything he says true, true, true. But we haven't gotten to the good part yet.
If there are people that don't want to face the truth.
Exactly. It's too heavy
and
they don't
want to
carry it.
Oh, isn't she clever? The truth is too heavy. They don't want to carry it. Amen. Did you hear the amen?
For one thing, 22 years of my life.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. I don't want to interrupt any of this. 22 years of my life.
There are people that don't want to face the truth.
Exactly. Amen. It's too heavy and they don't want to carry it.
And I can't help you, but for one thing, 22 years of my life. Just the same as my father, just the same as my older brother, just the same as my nephew. We all sacrificed our lives so that you can have the freedoms and liberties.
Okay, there's going to be lots of clapping.
Did you hear that? Alan West just claimed to be a zombie, just like his God. He said, I sacrificed my life for you to have your freedoms. Well, you can't sacrifice your life and still be alive. Alan West has confessed to being a zombie member of Congress. How many times on this program have I said, they walk among us? There's one. Zombies! Jenga! No, I didn't make that up.
There are people that don't want to face the truth.
Exactly. It's too heavy and they don't want to carry it.
And I can't help you but for one thing. 22 years of my life, just the same as my father, just the same as my older brother, just the same as my nephew. We all sacrificed our lives so that you can have the freedoms of liberty.
So not only is Alan West a zombie, his father is a zombie, his brother is a zombie, and his nephew is a zombie. Because they sacrificed their lives. You know, wait a minute.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
I don't think it does either. To sacrifice your life means that you get a nice little plot in Arlington or some other cemetery because you're no longer alive. But again, this guy belongs to the, if I imagine it in my head, it must be true school of, I hesitate to use the word thought. You remember? Do you remember? That piece that has become so unintentionally relevant to this discussion of teabaggers and so forth. This is one of those that I can't help coming back to just again and again and again. This ain't funny, McGee. Somebody call the Onion and tell them this ain't funny anymore. Headline, area man passionate defender of what he imagines Constitution to be. Spurred by an administration he believes to be guilty of numerous transgressions, self-described American patriot Kyle Mortensen, 47, is a vehement defender of ideas he seems to think are enshrined in the U.S. Constitution and principles that brave men have fought and died for solely in his head.
Our very way of life is under siege, said Mortensen, whose understanding of the Constitution derives not from a close reading of the document, but from talk show pundits, books by television personalities, and the limitless expanse of his own colorful imagination. It's time for true Americans to stand up and protect the values that make us who we are. According to Mortensen, an otherwise mild-mannered husband, father, and small business owner, the most serious threat to his fanciful version of the 222-year-old Constitution is the attempt by far-left traitors to strip it of its religious foundation. Right there in the preamble, the authors make their priorities clear. One nation under God, said Mortensen, attributing to the Constitution a line from the Pledge of Allegiance, which itself did not include any reference to a deity until 1954.
Well, there's a reason they put that right there at the top, Mortensen said.
This is no longer parody. This is no longer satire. This is an accurate representation of the malevolent ignorance that stalks this nation.
I, just like my father and before me, and just like my older brother and just like my nephew, laid down our lives so you could have your freedoms and liberties. And then got up again, having laid down our lives and sacrificed them, got up again and ran for Congress and had a very vocal supporter that I never that I never disavowed, who said that if ballots didn't work, bullets would do fine. You'll notice, as I said, the amen in the room. So it was sometime after that that Nicole Sandler tried to get a couple of questions answered. Because, see, Alan West wasn't actually taking questions from his constituents. They all had to be written down on cards and pre-approved by some sort of Republican office of Alan West commissariat. So Nicole Sandler hollered out her questions and was taken away. And when she told the rent-a-cop or whatever to take his hands off her, was handcuffed and turned over to Fort Lauderdale police. Here's another one of those things that I've been saying a lot lately. The First Amendment is little more at this point in 2011, or 2764 ab urbe condita, if you like your Roman calendar. But in 2011 of the current era, the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States is no longer anything more than a life support system for the religion industry. So all of that, was available to for-profit media editors and producers and planners. But the minute that a release went out that the President of the United States was going to release his long-form birth certificate, those nine dead Americans, bye-bye. No 24-hour news cycle for you. The abuse of questioners at town hall meetings. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. Even the fact that there is a member of Congress hailing from Florida who is apparently a zombie. Memory hole. News Ninja Susan noting, Bob, if this dude was in Sparta, he would have been exposed on a hillside as defective. Yeah, that brain, it no work real good. But that all went away. And what followed after it, even the shakeup at the Pentagon, gone. Bye. That all went away in a foaming, frothing admixture of birtheristic frenzy. In which, interestingly, the for-profit media tried to have its cake and eat it too. Because on the one hand, they said, "What are the?" Little Chuck Todd and his talking goatee said, "Well, Barack Obama released his birth certificate 2 years ago. I thought this issue was gone then." And then went on to talk some more about Donald Trump. Note coming in via a PM from Onward to Dystopia. Hey, Bob. Being that I live in the 22nd District, I can tell you most people down here aren't the religious fundy types as you have in the rest of the Bible Belt. Most of the folks in South Florida are transplants from the Northeast and couldn't care much for religion, as one might suspect from the audio clip of Alan West. Well, they were certainly there. But just because most are secular doesn't mean that they're not batshit crazy. special kind of crazy, as you've put it before on your show. South Florida is more of an anarcho-capitalist Randian wonderland where the alcohol is always flowing and the drugs are aplenty. I've lived here my whole life, and I could go on and on about all the crazy history of this place known as South Florida. But on a positive note, I must praise our local newspapers, Sun Sentinel and Palm Beach Post, for staying on top of these right-wing thugs such as Governor Rick Scott and Alan West. Good, I'm glad some member of the for-profit media are. But out in mass for-profit media world today, the ship ran onto the reef and went all to pieces. Here's how bad it was. President Barack Obama said that he would address the nation regarding his birth certificate at 9:45 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Donald Trump was in front of microphones no later than 9:20, 9:30. The White House likes to start things fairly on time, fairly promptly. Donald Trump was still talking at 9:46 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Trump literally, thanks to the for-profit media who kept the cameras rolling, Trump literally trumped the President of the United States of America, during which time he took credit for compelling, you know, that fascist, communist, Muslim, Kenyan with a deep-seated hatred of colonialism, took credit for compelling him to release his birth certificate. Poor old Barack Obama stood there when he finally did get to talk, saying that this was just too much of a distraction and he had to do something about it and had to put this thing to bed, and that he hoped that this would now finally be over. Well, Barack, we got a saying up here in the hills, and I say this to you as your friend, not your adversary. Hope in one hand and shit in the other, and see which one fills up first, brother. Because you'd no sooner gotten done talking then it was on again. Before you even started talking, Donald Trump said, well, you know, I'm going to have to examine the document and make sure it's legit. Now, I had a note from David in Tennessee long about that time. And David noted, Barack Obama's released his long-form birth certificate. Fine by me. He threw in a jab at Birther Nation, calling them carnival barkers. That was one of the early memes as well. The President of the United States has called Donald Trump a carnival barker. News at 11. Said David, thus I go to my if-only thought. If only the President had said, my fellow Americans, I have this day released my much-ballyhooed long-form birth certificate. The document has been there all along as sham issues were ginned up concerning its existence. My friends, various entities and individuals created cottage industry after website, after fundraising mechanism, after political movement to create concern in the nation devoid of any real basis in reality. Hucksters and mudslingers alike stirred this fetid pot so as to confuse and distract far too many Americans. Please, my friends, please consider the utter illegitimacy of this birther crew as some of these same people manufacture obfuscating non-issues about me and our efforts to bring our nation back to full flower. See, that's probably what the President of the United States would have said if that Secretary of Jesus, Barack, that we have long advocated needs to be in the cabinet, had been there. Now, on the one hand, some wishful thinking types said, oh, this was a stroke of genius on President Obama's part. Now he'll reel in the independents. Now the independents will be on his side because they'll see just how crazy the right-wing teabagging birth and death or booger eater crowd are. Oh, he certainly outflanked them this time. And I sat there thinking, oh, if only it was true. But it wasn't. It was no time at all before John King had secured his post-Barack Obama birth certificate announcement presser interview of Donald Trump. You know, if this is to be taken at face value, then the moment that Barack Obama says, bye, y'all, Donald Trump is done as a political force, right? Because nobody who is an actual legitimate member of the Fourth Estate would give him another nanosecond of time because he had been shown up for the fake and the fraud that he was. That's where that legitimate member of the Fourth Estate part sort of kicked our ass, because there aren't many of them left in this country. Because, as I said, shortly thereafter, John King had booked his interview, and the man with a weasel on his head said, I got to check to make sure it's authentic. And by the way, you know, why has he never released his grades from Occidental? You know, I'm told by people. People tell me things. I hear things. They tell me, you know, he was a terrible student at Occidental, and then the next thing you know, he gets into Columbia. And then he's at Harvard. Yeah, why won't he release the school records? Why won't he release his grades? No, really. He really said that. And so I got to ask, what is it at the White House? Man, I was still on terrestrial radio when I created the image of thugs and nicknamed them the Stump Licker Bunch. When you go out in the woods and you've ground down the cane, and you're going to make up some, well, it starts out with syrup, innocently enough. But back in the bad old days before that little, the late unpleasantness of the 1860s, the dross, the nasty part, it was still sugary, would be left in a stump. There'd be yellow jackets and bees all over it, and ants and worms and stuff. But it was left there, and it would, as nature is wont to do, ferment. And people would go and drink it, and it was called stump liquor. And would get just blind, mean-ass, crazy, fighting, stupid, drunk. And it was said that if you had a snoot full of stump liquor, good morning would be enough to get your throat slit. Howdy-do would be enough to get a punch in the face. Because the stump liquor bunch were crazy, mean, and hateful. Well, that's what we're dealing with here. Donald Trump is stump liquor crazy. And if Barack Obama had dug up his dead mama, it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference. Not a bit of difference.
Well, you know, we're going to have to analyze the document and make sure it's real.
Why didn't he release it till now, huh? Meanwhile, over at Radio Rwanda, the following. On a font at Fox News' website, they ran a banner headline. It reads as follows.
breaking news. White House releases what it says is President Obama's long-form birth certificate. What it says. Not White House releases Obama's long-form birth certificate. What it says is President Obama's long-form birth certificate. Contemporary with that, and along the way, by the way, our buddy Jesse out in Hollywood pointed out that the meme was already taking hold. President Barack Obama called Donald Trump a carnival barker. But contemporaneous with the banner at Fox News, well, there was Joseph Farah of Wingnut Daily speaking of the birth certificate as follows. We look forward to reviewing it, like so many other Americans do, at this late date. But it is important to remember there are still dozens of other questions concerning this question of eligibility that need to be resolved to assure what has become a very skeptical public concerning Barack Obama's parentage, his adoption, his citizenship status throughout his life, and why he continues to cultivate a culture of secrecy around his life. Repeatedly, Donald Trump said, why didn't he just produce the birth certificate when Hillary Clinton asked him for it? Why didn't he do that? Never mind the fact that he did. And that was enough, and that was good enough. And, you know, the answer is, well, the Donald, the dick, he did produce it. Hillary Clinton was satisfied with it. And she's not a loon, but you are. And there was the usual xenophobic stuff during his airport tarmac press conference. Why isn't he out there making OPEC drop? OPEC controls the price of oil. All of a sudden, that free market just went gone. OPEC controls the price of oil. Gee, I didn't know Canada was a member of OPEC. Last I checked, we get the majority of our foreign oil from two places, Canada and Mexico. Right? Yeah. Why isn't he doing something about the Chinese? You know, as long as you're talking about somebody foreign, as long as you're talking about that one, then you're continuing to drive the message home. I wouldn't be surprised if half the audience hasn't gone. It just gone away. This is so goddamn disgusting, I can hardly stand myself for talking about it. Yeah, you're right, Marty. By the way, didn't Trump promise to release his tax records when President Not Sure showed the birth certificate? Or did I dive onto the floor trying unsuccessfully to save a rally in volleyball once too often? No. You're right, Marty. He did. No, the wingnuts were out there immediately saying, no, not that long-form birth certificate. We mean the extra-long ribbed-for-special-pleasure birth certificate. This has to do with one thing and one thing only. Can we all just say it? Has anybody harbored even the last lingering doubt about this? Please put it to bed now. It's over. It's done. Because, you see, John Grumpy McCain was not born in the United States. There was never a word said about it. The for-profit media will say, well, you know, he wasn't born in the United States, but he was born in the Panama Canal Zone. The courts thought that was enough. John McCain wasn't born in the Panama Canal Zone. He was born in a hospital that did not sit in what was then the canal zone. He was born on Panamanian soil, not canal zone soil. But that man's so damn pale that if he takes a drink of Cabernet, you can see it going down his throat. So we'll just leave that alone. But that one, if he produced video footage showing him emerging from his poor dead mother's womb on August the 4th, 1961, in Hawaii, Farah would post something saying, well, we have to make sure the film hasn't been doctored. And Fox would post a banner headline saying, White House releases what it claims is video of Mrs. Obama's birth. And some right-wing nut, the fundamentalist religion industry goon, would claim to have audio of his midwife, of the midwife from Kenya. Say, oh, no, he was born here in Kenya. God almighty, I am so unutterably sick of it all. This whole country... Now, granted, I mean, we don't have what we usually consider to be ruins, but we are in ruins right now and trying desperately to scramble our way out to the point that our fingernails are blooded from the effort. And a for-profit media that are not worth piss continue to facilitate and to collaborate with the most toxic, pernicious, hateful segments of our society, the people who would cheer if a cross were burned on the White House grounds and prove themselves unworthy of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. Well, I guess that's about enough from me. Let's you and me talk, because there is stuff to consider, isn't there? Yeah. So we'll take a little break and come back. It's 3 minutes past 7 o'clock here on the East Coast. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Emphasis, by the way, on listener-supported. This is The Horn.
Some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you. dogs cry out in the night as they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right, sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.
Second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got their bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, the line's certainly stacked up in a hurry. Two lines open if you want to get in line. Email rolling in from David in Tennessee. Even baseball's tainted, Bob. Used to be we could scratch, pee, get a fresh one, go and you know, beat up on take me out to the ball game. But not anymore. Not now. Oh, no. Now we got to grind. Grind through. God bless America. Drives me to drink, it does, says David. You know, you can't use a phrase like drives me to drink without immediately going to the prophet William Charles Duncan Fields, otherwise known as W.C. Fields, who once announced, "That woman drove me to drink, a fact for which I am eternally grateful." Yeah, I know, my impressions suck. But I just saw something down the side of my Gmail. You know, the email address is bobkincaid@gmail.com. For about 2 weeks now, we've had an advertisement going, "Coming soon, better ads in Gmail." Oh, bliss! My life is complete. But you know what? If they got better ads coming, that probably means smarter algorithms, because I just read you the entirety of David's email. It's about baseball. So here's what the Google algorithms think I might find interesting from an advertising standpoint. Under Armour baseball, slide into home in comfort. Find accessories in your style and size. And then, God knows, Warren Winch, lowest dollars ever. Check out our new line of winches. Prices as low as $3.99 after rebate. Grill guards and bull bars.
What, Edith?
There's another one. Weston Airy Steelcraft Romic bull bars, push bars, and rear guards. And then Isuzu parts. Where in that email did David say anything about a damned Isuzu? Kath, you tell me Tim from L.A. wanted me to pass this on to you. Unbelievable. Nicole Sanders arrest report. The only problem is you didn't attach it or link it or anything. I'm curious, but I am damn sure curious to see it. I do that all the time. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, after I get through talking with you, I'm going to take many, many drugs.
Let me know if you find one that works.
Well, these are the narcotic variety. When I discovered that the president had done what he did, I figured, ooh, this is going to make the freepers go boogie. So I bebopped over to Freeperland.
Oh, you went to the swamp? You took one for the team?
Yeah, I went and waded through it. First of all, they ain't buying it.
No, of course, no.
But the interesting thing is how this particular cancer is metastasizing. You have one bunch that says, flat out, the whole thing's fake. They reject it completely. Then you have another one that says, but what about his grades? And then,
what about the LSAT scores? What about the ACT? What about the SAT?
Right. And then there's the one,
where's his baptismal certificate? He claims to be a Christian.
Yeah, and then there's the ones that you can practically see them jumping up and down like they had to pee as they typed, as they typed in. See, it says his father was from Africa, and that means he's ineligible. For people's edification, I pulled up a little bit of information. Andrew Jackson is the only president born of two immigrants, both Irish. The presidents born with one immigrant parent are Thomas Jefferson. His mother was English.
Of course, bear in mind, all this centers on the 14th Amendment. So anything that happens before the ratification of the 14th Amendment's kind of not really count.
Yeah. But you see, they're skipping the 14th Amendment because they want to get rid of that. Anyway, Gage Buchanan and Chester Arthur, both of whom had Irish fathers, and Woodrow Wilson, of course he was a Democrat, but he got that. And get this, Herbert Hoover.
Hubert Heaver?
Yeah, whose mothers were born respectively in England and Canada. So you see, the conservative icon himself, Herbert Hoover, wasn't eligible by their own rules.
Beautiful. But then again, but then again, Susan, all of this, and I mean no insult to you, I would say this if I was saying it by myself, this is all irrelevant to them. Because, you see, Hubert Hoover was white.
Yeah. But you see, yeah, that's it, exactly. And, you know, some of the guys, you could practically see, you know, on television, they were they were doing everything they could. You know, they were twisting in the wind, going this, that, and the other way, trying to get out of saying, this man is as much an American as me. And you could practically see it in their face. No, he's not. He's black. And you could just almost see.
Well, and one of these days, one of them really is, I swear, I'd lay a $5 bill on it. One of them's going to melt down and just go off into a sort of Tourette's-like litany of every epithet for a dark-skinned person that exists in the English language, and they're just not going to be able to help themselves. They're going to transform into Cartman from South Park.
Yeah, what I'm really really hoping is that when one of them decides to melt down, somebody nearby who's more or less liberal, or at least sane, has a video recorder on them and catches the whole thing. And then we can just spread it all over the internet.
But even that is problematic, Susan, because both the right-wing controlled media and what passes, well, you know, the rest of the for-profit, everybody, all the for-profit media will say, well, you know, that's just an isolated incident. That's just one crazy person. That's not like
it. That goes without saying. They'll try and bury it in the memory hole. But you know, the minute it goes, something like that goes up on YouTube, it'll go viral. Because, let's face it.
But once it goes viral, they'll still just say, well, you know, that's just an isolated crazy person.
Yeah, there's just, yeah, I know. But it's just, they can't, oh, and I got to take. The thing that embarrassed me as an American the most was that twit.
Which twit? There's lots of twits.
Oh, I can't even remember his name, the one with the hair.
Trump?
Yeah.
Or the lack thereof? The guy with the weasel on his head?
Yeah, the guy parading himself in front of the mic, saying how wonderful he is that he brought this about, da 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 da.
Well, it's become so shamelessly transparent because a couple of members of the for-profit media said, listen, are you going to run or are you not going to run? Oh, you'll just have to wait. You're going to be surprised.
Yeah, my foot. I will
tune in next week.
Right, yeah, I will give my right arm to have somebody in the crowd nail him with a pie in the face.
Well, I got a new guy I'm kind of proud of. There's a noted presidential historian and author, guy by the name of Douglas Brinkley.
Mm-hmm.
And he was interviewed on CNN, and he didn't go far enough, but he went somewhere that nobody's had enough guts to go, at least, you know, on for-profit media broadcasting yet. And he said the following, Susan. We don't have to blame the media for dealing with this issue. We have to blame NBC Entertainment. I disagree. But he said they need to dump Trump from his primetime news show. He's a poison toad on the airwaves. What corporate sponsor is going to be buying ad time for Donald Trump's show? Any company that goes into Trump and is willing to pay, is going to find consumer boycotts like they've never seen before. If you're going to do what Trump did and go after the President of the United States in such a grotesque and disingenuous way, grotesque and disingenuous being two words that were probably lost on 80% of the viewership of CNN, you better cough up the goods. Today, the Obama administration has shown what a charlatan Donald Trump really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would love to see MSNBC, well, that's the thing. He didn't go far enough. I don't know how we do it in America, Susan, but there needs to be a wholesale rejection of the for-profit media model. I mean, for people just out on the street, if you see somebody, some member of the for-profit media, and go, oh, wait, oh, just a second, I'll get my breath. You're a member of the for-profit media. What a jackass. Look, honey, and, you know, take your little child and look over there. It's a for-profit media jackass.
Or better yet, that attitude, and then throw in a little dollop of the way a quote, you know, reference to history for coming up here, folks. Go back to the way a woman was treated if, shall we say, she went astray before she married.
Oh, make them all wear scarlet peas for profit on their suits.
You know, the brushing aside of, you know, the shunning and the whole nine yards. And basically treat them like they've got leprosy.
If only there was some way. If only there was some way.
I'd really like to see is, and I realize this will never happen because this is what brought Dean down.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a note from Ray a little bit ago. He said, it is sad indeed, Bob. The right are already turning the 2012 election into distractions, not issues. I expect it out of the pigs, but my God, why do the media play along? You're right. They're scum. Our institutions have failed us, and we should be mad as hell. Because when and that's a line from Chris Hedges. When Chris Hedges says our institutions have failed us, he's not just talking about Republicans, and he's not just talking about Democrats, and he's not just talking about Congress or the courts or the executive branch. All of our institutions have failed us. The corporate institutions have failed us. The media institutions have failed us. The government, the courts, everything has failed us.
Yeah, we have a law on the books that will take care of the media, provided it's used. It's called the Sherman Antitrust Act. Don't hold your breath.
Well, the Sherman Antitrust Act was taken out behind the barn and beaten to death by a member of the Stumplicker Bunch, or several of them,
right,
a generation ago, Susan. I mean,
I shift the subject just a little bit?
Absolutely.
Get away from the stupid twit to another stupid twit.
From twit to twit to twit to twit.
Oh, and by the way, just for my own self,
peace of mind, sanity.
The women of Sparta did not raise the men of Sparta because they were taken from them at a very early age and basically sent over to the army barracks, and they were raised by the army.
Yeah.
So, you see, the women didn't have anything to do with the raising of their sons.
A Spartan husband barely even got to have Congress with his wife at all, save for procreative purposes.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, so how interesting is it that Alan West refers to Sparta as the group worth emulating, a totalitarian society that was arrayed against the forces of, wait for it, oh, look, freedom and democracy.
Yeah, and where it was commonplace, where all children were judged at birth, and if they were found to be even slightly not up to par, they were taken from their mothers and taken out to a hillside and left to die.
That was big doings throughout the ancient world. You can't just pin that on Sparta.
Yeah, but Sparta, I mean, they went in for it big. But anyway, here's my other nut. Did you hear what Bachman said?
Of which?
Well, she was making one of her little patriotic statements, and she made a comment about how she said to quote Lincoln, "We need to pass the torch of freedom and democracy." Well, guess what? She wasn't quoting Lincoln.
Oh no! Oh my God! Oh, send me the link. Send me the link. You know. We have, and I'm not trying to give anything away, we have sort of in production a beautiful little piece of satire that it's going to be huge. I mean, the people in her district in Minnesota will eat it for lunch. It is going to be big, that deals with exactly this topic. No, okay, so flesh this one out. I got to hear it.
Yeah, I will send you, believe it or not, I got it off a Hardball. I'm sitting there watching her say this, and wait a minute, I'm thinking, wait a minute, that was John Kennedy's inaugural address. And they couldn't...
Well, but she got confused, and you can confuse those two easily, because remember... Kennedy had a secretary named Lincoln, and Lincoln had a secretary named Kennedy.
They did some checking, and they couldn't find anything even close.
No, but see, this is all the after effect and outgrowth of that creepy bastard I was talking about last night, the wall builders guy. You don't have to cite sources anymore. You just have to claim it. You just have to claim that, Jesus told me to tell you about this.
Yeah. Well, you have to cite your sources when you talk to me.
By the way, William, just dropped this little note and sort of slayed me. The subject line just says, Sparta, Susan. And William says, in Sparta, Linda Lovelace might have been unemployed.
Yep.
Yeah. The procreation only.
Yes, exactly. And basically women were brood mares, and that's all they were.
Exactly. Hey, Susan, I'm going to roll on. We got them stacked up.
Okie doke.
All right, talk to you soon.
Night.
All right.
Love Agnes.
Sure thing. Bye. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey. I won't keep you for too long. I'm in the middle of trying to learn this XML hyper markup language.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway, I was like, are you kidding me this morning? I said, no, he did not come out. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh.
Things just got dramatically better.
Oh, God, that's weird. Yeah, it did. All right, well, anyway, is this the White House hiding behind the really real awful news? I mean, what's happening? Because that is absurd.
You know, I kind of went down that road myself, Sandra, and were they...
Well, because the news, I mean, you know, we got this huge transition in the police/security state going on with Petraeus becoming the head of the CIA. Hello?
Yeah, is that just 10 times creepy?
Oh, God, that one really got to me. You know, Panetta, he's a real turning into the last creepy creep, you know?
Yeah, and he's gonna go to the Pentagon, but apparently this is the way it works. And it was described as being a little bit of 11-dimensional chess. I hate that phrase.
Well, I don't.
Because he neutralized any potential, because Petraeus is a Republican. He neutralized any potential presidential ambitions Petraeus may have by sticking him at CIA.
Well, no, because George Bush was at CIA.
Yeah, but George Bush didn't run into the year. Well, I mean, he did, but he still had to sit out Reagan, and this sort of took, theoretically, was said to have taken the starch out of Petraeus because he'll be too old.
Oh, well, yeah, I suppose, but I mean, I'm sort of thinking that, you know, they can give it to Obama because the way it's shaking out, the country's going to be in such a state during his next 4 years if they keep going the way they're going. Mind you, though, he may have, you know, I'm not too sure about the whole releasing his birth certificate. I mean, you know, now it's graders, isn't it?
Well,
graders, not the birthers. Now it's the graders. They want to see some transcripts.
Oh, yeah, the graders, exactly.
Well, I don't
know. Or the testers, you could say.
You know, embarrassed as an American looking at this, I have to tell you. I just felt embarrassed. Listening to him talking about silliness, and it was just like, oh, dear God, this is so embarrassing, basically. I don't know what other emotion to throw out there.
Embarrassment? That was really. And I wanted to just sort of be, you know, right there with everybody who thought that, boy, he just really did he just did an end run on him. He just took all the steam right out of him. But I guess they kind of showed him, didn't they?
Well, I don't know about that because he didn't release the long I'm not black form. So when you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, because there's one of those, too.
Well, no, but basically what I'm saying is that there's no end to this, and I understand, I guess, but that's what I'm saying. There's some horrible shit going on, and this pops up, and everything is drowned out. I mean, we had Bernanke come out with the first press conference. Not that he said anything spectacular, but it was a first time, you know, a quite important to see the Fed.
Yeah, it's kind of like when the Japanese heard the emperor's voice the first time.
Well, it's just, yeah, it's like, you know, Canada, they have press conferences all the time. Their central bank. I mean, that's just how they have that kind of transparency. It's sort of set up. But this is really new for the American Fed. So I thought, okay. But that birther shit just drowned out.
Everything got drowned, Sandra. Everything got drowned.
And the crazy Afghan who said, no, I'm going to kill some motherfuckers today, and killed up all them soldiers. And that was huge. But where's that story?
No, it went away. It went away. And then there's another story out there that I saw that sort of got buried. And this one has some relevance. Headline from Politico, Sandra. Bank execs warn GOP on debt limit. Now this, you know, who is one of the ancient primary allies of the Republican Party? Why, look, the banking industry. Now this is the Republican Party's own little cash machine. And the banking, you know, the head honchos of banking, the lead paragraph just... Wall Street executives and their Washington lobbyists have been quietly, with members of Congress, particularly reluctant House GOP freshmen, have begun quietly to urge that they vote in favor of raising the $14.29 trillion debt limit as quickly as possible. And their warning, what they've told them is, look, if you fail to raise the debt limit, you're going to have a spike in interest rates, a possible collapse in equity prices, bank failures, and here's the last one, severe depression.
Well, no, but see, I mean, I understand that, but please keep in mind that this is a sovereign nation whose debts are in the denomination of the debt. I cannot stress this enough. So there's a lot of sort of smoke and mirrors going on. Like I told you before, there's no country in the world with this debt ceiling nonsense, and we have the reserve currency for now. So this is gibberish, Bob. From what? The banks and from everybody else, it's like, and you say, I mean, I understand, but it's just.
But I mean, this is where the mobster has the gun to your head, right?
Well, no, but
what I find interesting is they don't have they've got the gun to their own guys' heads. I'm not necessarily talking about the realities of whether or not that's true. what I find interesting is that they're talking to, you know, to their own people.
Well, no, they're telling them they can't play this game. I mean, I'm just saying that obviously it's not a game if they cause, you know, this sort of chaos that the bankers and all these people who are running this show will think will happen. But I just get kind of confused because, you know, the whole sovereign debt crisis stuff is really dicey when all your debt is in your own currency. So, I mean, it's not like it's Greece. Where
right, because, you know, the Republicans like to talk about, you know, well, what happens if China calls their notes?
Well, that's not going to happen. China can't afford to do that.
Right, well, if China calls its notes and we say, sorry, dude.
They go around the toilet, too. I mean, that's the thing. It's just kind of, you know, these are power, issues of power. But anyway, the Republicans are, I mean, that Ryan, he's an idiot. And it's just kind of like, what did you think would happen if you said that you were going to take away people's health care? They're in a fantasy world, and it's interesting that it's kind of coming undone. And like you said, this fool yelling at people saying, oh, we don't need to be rude. No, bitch, you want to destroy people's lives. How much ruder can you get?
Yeah, just
think of that dynamic. It's like, what are you talking about? These people are fighting for their damn lives because your ass is threatening to destroy the safety net. You want to talk polite? Oh, no. I'm so sick of that in this country. It's like, this is the most brutal country on so many fronts, yet we have to have pretenses about engagement and politeness? Come on.
And what, you know, because he's doing it without a gun in his hands? Again, no, the false equivalency just... You know, they birthed this new form of discourse in this country, this screaming match as conversation with your representative. You know, learn to live with it.
Well, not only that, but like I always said, when, you know, with these sort of privileged, pampered old white people, you touch any of their little entitlements, they're going to lose their minds, as we saw. And speaking of that, why aren't we hearing about that terrorist in Colorado?
You know, I've still got him sitting here for some appropriate moment. This guy's a loon. Well, okay, no, he's not.
You know what in the world?
But, no, the best part, and I don't know if you know this or not, it's one of those tough ones for me. It's Littleton, Colorado, by way of West Virginia.
Oh, no. See, no, I didn't. I really didn't go that deep. I was just sort of tripping on how we don't hear about it because it's the same group doing the same thing. But anyway, what's the connection?
He got out of prison. I mean, you want to talk about going back to your previous life of crime. He got out of prison April the 13th. He was in federal prison in Atlanta and Estill, South Carolina.
Now, what's his name? Leon or something?
Moore. His name's Moore. Earl Albert Moore.
Okay, yeah, because see, for a minute, I said, no, it's not a darkie. It took me a minute because the name. what can I say? I'm like that, but yeah, then I saw.
No, dude has white supremacy tattoos all over him.
Oh.
And back several years ago, he robbed the Bank of Hoosas. In Raleigh County, Crab Orchard, West Virginia, got away with $2,546, which in American money these days is right up there with Jimmy Buffett's great filling station holdup.
That ain't nothing. All that effort for that little anyway.
So here's the fun part. I mean, this is because we have these conversations about our judicial system and our punishment fetish. Because, no, he is not of dark skin, and I can prove it to you without ever saying I've seen a photograph of him. A judge sentenced Moore to 18 years in prison for the bank robbery. I mean, this is one of those, you know, go in, present the gun, everybody down on the floor, fill up the bag. You know, it's a bank robbery, for Jesus' sakes.
Well, he shouldn't be out. Why is he out?
A judge sentenced Moore to 18 years in prison for the bank robbery, but a federal appeals court in 2006 ruled his stiff sentence was unreasonable, and it was reduced to 7 years. And then he got out in six because the Federal Bureau of Prisons spokesman said he got good conduct release.
Right. Okay, well, see, that'll never happen to folks. That's amazing. I thought...
No, Leon's doing the whole seven. You know what I mean? Just to work with what you gave me. But, you know, Leon's not getting the appeal down from 18 to 7 in the first place.
Oh, and maybe be getting some added on, you see. So that's amazing. Wow. Well, listen, blessed that these people don't know how to make a proper bomb. We've had a couple of near misses lately, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but the thing is, they're going to figure it out sooner or later.
I know, but I'm just being thankful for what we have at the moment because they keep putting bombs everywhere, and it's like, what happened to this vaunted security state we got going on?
Yeah,
oh,
it ain't at the mall.
Wait, it's only to keep us cowed and scared. That's what it's about. It ain't about protecting us.
And, this, you know, early on they said, well, you know, it's the anniversary of Columbine and everything, and right away the FBI said, no, ain't got nothing to do with that. Dude's a white supremacist. So, you know, let's take that into account. He is, again, a white supremacist. He is a right-wing Republican. Well, if he could vote. But, you know, he's worried about, you know, you've got to take country back. And I guarantee you, if you sat down next to him at the beer joint, well, not you, maybe me, he said, America, I just got out of prison, and I got to tell you, America went to hell when that one got in the White House.
Oh, God. Well, no, but speaking of that one, the other one, this West Negro, that fool, he need to... I can't look at him no more. I'm like, nigga, get on. He's terrible. And he's dead.
I mean,
when you said that, because I was thinking, as soon as you ran that clip, I said, what, you dead, bitch? And you came out right after that. I was dying. Because I'm like, too bad that's not true. We wouldn't have to deal with you. You see?
Why
he's standing there talking that shit to us then?
And how, you know, but how is it he can reference about 22 years in the military and never reference the means by which the 22 years was prevented from being 23?
Well, because he won't. I mean, it's just, that guy's like my worst nightmare, you know, some sort of, I'm a man, I've been emasculated, you know, I'm scared of women,
He looks like Steve Urkel meets Eddie Haskell.
No, it's just hideous, you know. I look at that guy and I think, damn, where's Alan Keyes when you need him? At least that was humorous.
Yeah, because there ain't nothing funny about that.
This guy is just, he's like horrible. And
but to, I mean, you know, to Jesus criminy, to uphold the Spartan the oligarchy.
No, that was just embarrassing moment. I was embarrassed. I'm like, no, dude, shut up. And that woman, those horrible, fundy white women, please, Bob, deliver me. I mean, they're too much.
Don't you just want to go to a little island somewhere and...
Listen, but they seem to pop out of the same hellhole. Because they all sound the same.
Well, remember, this thing was being held at a mega church.
Yeah, but it's just, listen, it is a parallel universe for me. I have to say, I'm just kind of like, really?
But something did come out of this, and I am not, please understand, Sandra, and again, this goes back to some prior conversations, I am not being a smart ass about this. I am deadly in earnest. When Nicole Sandler said to Tom Hartman, I was in solitary just like Bradley Manning.
Oh, wait, no, listen. Do not listen. No, I can't. I don't want to know anymore. Are you kidding me?
Well, no,
why
she,
am I laughing? I shouldn't be laughing, but that can't be.
Well, no, again, I'm not being a smartass, but she did say it.
You're making it up.
Nope, sorry.
Wait,
you know, Ben Birch Archives, Tom Hartman, you can go check it out.
She said, I was in solitary confinement like...
Just like Bradley Manning.
Well,
And my thought...
Mamiya got his shit upheld again for the umpteenth time.
And you know, can I just take this moment to do a quick little free Leonard Peltier? Just saying.
Exactly.
And I'm not being a smartass, but no, I'm hoping that by saying I was in solitary just like Bradley Manning, and by going on and talking as she did, again, not being an ass, me, by talking about the surly, sarcastic, offhanded, negligent, you know, oh, you want an apology? Here's an apology. And they spray her in the face with pepper spray, which she also claimed was done to her. Maybe.
I'm sorry. I don't really. I know I'm horrible. I'm terrible. But you are so wrong.
But with all of that, maybe because, you know, this was like the Brevard County lockup or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe we start to have that desperately needed conversation, Sandra, about the fact that there's lots of people in solitary in America. That there are lots of people who don't have pillowcases. That there are lots of people who wear orange suits and plastic shower shoes.
And there are lots of people who broke the law who ain't been tried. Okay?
Yeah, and then there's the white supremacist who got out in 6 years for good behavior.
Exactly. No, but see, I'm sorry to be stuck there, and I know it's just us being really bitchy, but come, you know, we get the whole white progressive hard on about Bradley Manning. I'm sorry to go there, but it's just like, right, dude, spread yourself. Can you do more than
let's walk and chew the gum?
And chew, yeah, because I don't have no time for the cause celeb. This ain't the 90s. Shit is falling apart all around. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Make some connections and do something else.
Yeah, at the same time, being careful not to verge over into Mr. Jones's neighborhood and start talking about prison planets and shit.
Well, you know, no. No, I mean, no. When that dude went on The View, really, that was, to me, I thought, well, that should have shot his shit, but I guess not. When I saw Alex Jones on The View, I was like, damn, rabbit hole much?
Well, and see, I have the sneaking suspicion that this Carnival Barker thing is going to get legs, and I'm not trying to help it. You know, this is just a conversation among decent, liberal, progressive people. We're not advancing any memes. We don't have the power to do that, Sandra. But this Carnival Barker thing, he called Donald Trump, Donald Trump's a wealthy man with terrible hair. I mean, I called him a Carnival Barker, for God's sakes. I mean, it's not like he's got a striped shirt and garters on his sleeves or anything. I mean, you called him a Carnival Barker. You can just imagine it sort of fulminating out there in the for-profit media. There's probably an interview taking place right now somewhere with maybe Howie Kurtz saying, well, I don't think it's very appropriate for the president to call a man names on the blah, 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 blah. And it makes me absolutely crazy. But you know it's going to happen, but how far of a leap to that? Well, you know, when Barack Obama started calling names like Carnival Barker and Sideshow, that just shows that he's an angry black man.
Well, yeah, no way. Any time that Obama makes any effort to defend the indefensible, you know, he leaves himself open to be called the next N-word type of analogy. You know what I mean? He cannot win, and it pains me to see him talking about we need to stop this silliness when he should have said we need to stop this shit, you dumb MFers. See, now that would have been newsworthy.
Well, I mean, you know, this is where we look down at the ever-changing little rubber band on our wrists, Sandra, and today it says WWTD. What would Truman do? I mean, Drew Pearson criticized his daughter's piano playing, and Harry Truman called him a son of a bitch.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Truman. Now, listen, you lost, Bob, if you dream it.
I know. I'm just wandering around behind the little animals. But, you know, God, a guy can hope, you know?
No, but...
But I got to tell you, Sandra, the Jesus Barack guy, the guy that we want in the cabinet...
Yeah.
He would have been doing overtime today because
After President Obama waited for Donald Trump to get done saying whatever crazy crap he and his hair were saying and had to go on late, you know what he did, right?
No.
Oh, okay, because you're not going to be all right.
Oh, no, what?
He and Michelle, and again, I'm not one of these assholes. I'm just pointing this out. He and Michelle immediately went out to Andrews Air Force Base, climbed up the little stairs into Air Force One, and flew to Chicago to tape an episode with Oprah.
What?
Oh, see, yes, we, ya, da.
Oh,
I mean,
boy.
Come on. See, no, that's where you say, hey, Oprah, come on over to the White House, and we'll do an interview. I mean, everybody else that does an interview with the president, you know, they more or less go to the White House and they set up the two chairs there, and there's a fireplace in the background on the table in the middle, and they sit there and they tape the interview, and ooh, that's impressive. I got to talk to the president.
Well, yeah, but he's going there though.
Right. I mean, this.
Oh, it's just getting more ridiculous by the day. What in the now? See, yeah, that's terrible. You're right. That is bad.
Well, see, sometimes I'll joke with Agnes. I was making us a snack earlier today. And I said, I hollered, honey, come here, it's ready. And she said, I'm kind of busy, Bob. And just off the top of my head, I said, well, you know, if Muhammad cannot come to the mountain will go to Muhammad. And took my mountainous bulk and carried the snack to Agnes. And this is a little bit of that. I mean, Jesus Christ, Oprah could buy Barack Obama and sell him a million times over just in terms of her net worth. But she's busier than the President of the United States? I don't have all the details, but the way it was reported, he was getting on a plane to fly to Chicago to tape for him and Michelle to tape a session with Oprah. And if I'm being shallow, I expect the emails and I'll deal with it. But they didn't say, and you know, he's doing that because the main reason he's going to Chicago is. No, that part wasn't there. But then again, it was the for-profit media, so who knows? But I just heard that and went, well, there'll be for-profit media conniptions tomorrow.
No, I mean, I mean, I don't know. That just seems really counterintuitive. But on the other hand, this poor man at this point, there's nothing he can do. It's just kind of, for him to step out and make comment about this Bertha shit, I guess because it had escalated so much with Donald Trump, right? It was, I can only imagine what goes on.
Well, I mean, I assume you saw the brief statement that he made. He said, you know, we've got big things to be talking about in the next few weeks about the debt and the budget and stuff like that. And every time I open my mouth, all I get in return is a bunch of birth certificate stuff.
Yeah, no. I know. That's why I was on total cringe. I was up thinking, what is happening? And there it was. No, I listened to it because I just couldn't. It's like a train wreck. You know, you gotta look at it. I'm thinking, oh my God. But the other news that killed me, that was also squashed, was, hey, looky see, Fatah and Hamas, they have reconciled their differences.
And did you see the statement from Netanyahu?
Well, no, I think he wants to go to war with somebody badly, but he's being
flawed. Well, no, but not just anybody. Netanyahu is kind of like an eagle. You know, an eagle never attacks anything that can actually defend itself.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to go and throw down in, say, South Lebanon. Because he tried, you know, they tried that and got their butts handed to him.
Yeah, no.
He wants to go and do some more, not quite slow motion, but not quite full on genocide in maybe Gaza.
Well, no, but this is, you know, I just thought it was interesting because the meetings were orchestrated by, Egypt, so to broker this deal between, and this is the Israel's worst nightmare, is to have some unity. In Palestine.
Yeah. Well, but his statement was what just sort of chilled my blood a little bit. He said,
The Palestinian Authority needs to decide whether it wants peace with Hamas or peace with Israel.
Oh, I know, no. It's a straight up, you know, the war is on.
Well, I mean, no, at that point, Netanyahu's Jack Palance could pick up the gun.
Yeah, no. It definitely was.
Pick up the gun.
Was that from Shane?
Yeah.
Yeah. This definitely, that's the story. But, you know, I don't know. It might be a bit of a problem for Israel unless they're going to just go full out and, you know, just destroy.
Well, I heard an interesting statistic yesterday, I believe it was, Sandra. You know, during the uprising in Egypt, we were repeatedly messaged on the fact that, you know, because they had, you know, man on the street, woman on the street, workaday Egyptians who just wanted bread or to be able to buy bread, who said, you know, listen, we don't give a damn about Israel. You know, we want a just government. We want democracy. We want to say so and how things work. And that was pretty much the same message out of Tunisia.
Mm.
Well, I heard a statistic yesterday that was just, because it was something like 52% of the Syrian people want Egypt to disavow its treaty with Israel.
Oh, no, that's on the horizon. There's no reason why in the long term that deal in the 70s won't fall away. And the thing with Syria, which is also freaking the Israelis out, is the Golan Heights. Listen, Israel stands to lose a lot. I don't care how powerful they are. What are they going to do? Just go back to the 70s where they're at war with different Middle Eastern countries every other year?
Well, if Syria was to occupy the Golan, wouldn't their argument be something along the lines of, look, we occupied it, we own it, it was good for you, it's good for us.
Right, well, that's the thing. But see, Israel, they need to have a reasonable relationship with Egypt. That's the thing. And the fact that it's, you know, you have secret meetings going on with the Palestinians, you know, they must be tripping. So look for some bombings to start. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, with Israel, maybe they'll attack Syria. Who knows? They might just go ahead and attack Iran. Who knows? I'm scared, basically.
It's getting a little warm.
And there's another massive flotilla being organized, and I'm thinking, oh, dear God, you know.
Well, and again, there's a target. You know, there's a target Netanyahu could shoot at that wouldn't shoot back. Maybe they could kill another American citizen in an execution style slaying at point blank range.
Yeah, no. It's all, but it's, you know, but it's, the whole point is getting back to where we started was the fact that President Obama had to came out and did this. And it just sort of shattered all the news. And I'm so sick with this Afghanistan stuff. I mean, that is such a disaster that's unfolding, and nothing's being done about it.
And
what was the other thing I heard?
The sick thing is, in this, Sandra, the only choices we have are they are inept at messaging and he is playing 11-dimensional chess.
Well, I don't know where I heard this. I think maybe I was listening to anti-war radio, but they were talking about the Pakistani and Karzai getting together because, you know, they're trying to now suggest for him to get the Americans out.
The Pakistan is saying, you know, listen, we got our buddies the Chinese over here, and we can probably sort out the problem with the Taliban a lot easier than the Americans can. Why don't you just get rid of the Americans? Ask them to leave, Hamid. Why don't you do that?
Right. So I'm just saying that situation is seems to be out of hand, and we have all these people over there, and where's the leadership?
Where's the... I'm not being... Again, wow, I haven't said that. Where's the purpose?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's just kind of... That's why the whole Bertha stuff is just depressing. It's like, oh, no. I'll let you go, but so that football business is interesting, huh? I guess they'll be going to the Supreme Court, huh?
Yeah, and, you know, you want to take the over-under on that vote?
Well, I heard that next judge is a friend of management.
Oh, you mean the next one up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're going to the is it the appeals or some other?
Well, yeah, it has to go to the Court of Appeals.
Right, and yeah, but I mean, who knows? I'm not too sure because the owner's been handed their asses.
See, that's one of the things I really, really hate about modern life, Sandra, is that we live in this world where, for instance, if it's a Supreme Court or a court case that's making its way through the federal system, we no longer make determinations of how the or prognostications about how the case should turn out based upon the settled law that controls the case. No, rather, we make our determinations now based upon, oh, wait a minute, is the next court full of right-wing Reagan-Bush appointees, then, yeah, we know how it's going
to
end.
Well, no, and you make a good point because you used to be able to look at the system of what court it was and know, well, they tend to operate this way as a court. You're right. That's out the window now.
And to the extent that it's a decision made by a district, one of the fundamental principles that controls American jurisprudence is that trial courts are the closest to the issues, the closest to the facts, the closest to the parties themselves, and therefore more likely than not to reach a correct decision. And as such, the rules of construction and the rules of interpretation and the rules of appeal say that great deference should be afforded to the trial court level.
Right. It shouldn't be willy-nilly. No, I understand that. But, I mean, you're right, because as soon as I looked at who had appointed this judge and the record of siding with management, what else am I left to...
Well, no, I mean, it's not a problem with you. It's a problem. It's a problem with the pathetic, dysfunctional state into which we have devolved. Again, you know what I was saying earlier on with Susan. I think it was. You know, what we're talking about here is what Chris Hedges said. All, you know, and he says this in almost every column now. All of our institutions have failed us.
Well, I mean, when I first started studying, you know, the U.S. government, I was taken aback by judicial review from the jump. I'm sorry. And, you know, I just thought, oh, wait a minute, huh? You know, so it's always been very dubious.
Well, see, my head is still done in by the stuff that I heard Dr. Bill talking about Monday night. If you get a chance, download that if you didn't hear it, Sandra. I mean, I'm not just pitching the Dr. Bill session.
Oh, no, I want to. I may listen to it.
Because,
Because
sure. You know, the walk away from that conversation and that degree of depth is something that Dr. Bill said that just, I felt like I'd gotten a hammer right in the middle of my forehead. He said, the Constitutional Convention, and this may be old news to you, the Constitutional Convention was not about creating greater democracy, but about limiting democracy. They felt like that under the Articles of Confederation, there was just a little bit too much.
Well, no. That's the thing. I mean, every time, you know, when I was teaching that intro government class or adjuncting for it, every time I reread the Federalist paper, I'm like, damn, this is some serious spin. And I go back to the Articles of Confederation, and I'm like, they were kind of right. All the warnings that they made to the people thinking about ratifying the Constitution, they had some really good points. I concluded.
Right, and the argument that I've heard Dr. Bill making, and I think I've got this right, is that it was the failure of the Articles of Confederation became a self-fulfilling prophecy that was created by people who said the Articles of Confederation have failed. You know, there's so much that we don't know. And, you know, Dr. Bill was right there bemoaning the fact. And he said, you know, none of us get to know this. You don't hear this stuff until you're working on graduate levels. And maybe not even until you're at your PhD level, when this ought to be stuff that we're teaching on the ground.
Well, I mean, one of the most interesting books, I can't even remember because of my mind, but it's all about the economic reason for the Constitution, and I forget the name of the writer, but it was written in beginning of the century, and it was all about the whole economic aspect of the founders. And it all pointed to limiting democracy. I mean, Madison, that was his whole thing.
But I mean, you know, I've read Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States 3 or 4 times, Sandra, and I've never heard it put as bluntly as what I heard it come out of Dr. Bill O'Brien's mouth. And it was just, holy cow!
Well, it wasn't some of the convention. It was also closed off to the general, you know, to the public, and it was, yeah, there was a lot of sort of anti-democratic aspects to it.
And yet, in America, we're taught that the framers of the Constitution, in full good faith, came together determined to create. And, you know, and they said, you know, what kind of government have you given us, Mr. Franklin? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. And then the fireworks start going off, and somebody cues up the national anthem, and we stand, and we salute, and we sing, and it wasn't that.
Well, I fall more in line with Madison conceding the Bill of Rights in order to, you know, get what they wanted to get. You see what I mean? I take a very jaundiced view just because of who they were. I mean, it was a top-down revolution, let's be honest.
And, you know, it was our buddy Jim. They touched briefly in the couple of hours they were talking Monday night. They touched briefly on the question of free persons of color at the time of all of this contemplation. And he asked, were free persons of color counted as one person or three-fifths? And it sort of took Bill and Professor Lilly back a couple of seconds, and, you know, what a question. Because, you know, if you engage in that discussion, then how do people in bond servitude not be full persons? That the freedom is what matters and not the skin color? I mean, that's the mind-boggling. But that's, you know, that's the kind of angels dancing on the head of a pin stuff that these guys were into back then.
Definitely. Well, I know I definitely will check out that. Well, what was that? How many hours was that?
It's 2 hours. And the archive is, I believe, already up at White Rose, but it's also viewable on Ustream. If you just, in the search box, put American History Seminar, it'll pop right up.
Okay, no, I definitely will check that out. But, I wanted to ask you something else, but oh well, skipped my mind.
Sorry, I didn't mean to just run over top of you there.
Oh, no. That's, you know.
These things happen. Sandra, thanks a million.
All right.
Talk to you later. Bye now.
Bye.
And again, you know, that's graduate level history instruction, and you get it for free via the Horn. Kind of well worth it if you're into having history available to you that hasn't just been made up. News Ninja Susan sent me along the link to the Bachman thing. You know, where she quotes John Kennedy as having been said by Abraham Lincoln. And see, every time you just have to ask, what is the number of people in the United States who, having heard that come from Michelle Bachman's lips, naturally assume because of their biases that, well, you know, she wouldn't lie to us. She loves Jeebus. She's got to be telling the truth, right? Yeah. So onward we go. About 9 minutes past the hour. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up, man?
Nothing much. Nothing much. I guess in America the song remains the same, huh?
Yeah, but it's not near as good as the movie.
Oh, yeah. So I'm hearing things. I guess it's good to be out here. That's all I can say. It's good to be out here. Not to rub it in, but... I just want to comment on this whole birther thing.
Sure.
at the end of the day, this is, you know, people trying to maintain the status quo of America. You know, it's like, not to hark on race, but, you know, they were going to change the Constitution so Arnold could run for president. There was talk about that.
Now, I remember that.
Okay. Nobody has ever questioned George Bush's grade. Oh, you know, well, that was his formative years. You know, no one is perfect.
Oh, I remember when he released his grades, and it turned out he was a D student at Yale. And we sit around going, how does that get into the Harvard MBA program?
Well, again, it's viewed upon. What I'm getting at, it's viewed upon. Okay, he's a young man; he's not perfect. You know, kind of like it's celebrated like Animal House kind of thing. And they did put Animal House clips in his biography in PBS. On PBS. You know, he was this John Belushi character, so it made him look cool.
Right. What did they call him? Youthful Indiscretions? Even though back when he was doing the Youthful Indiscretions, a very young Gary Trudeau, who would later go on to great fame with Doonesbury, did an expose in the, I don't know, Yale Daily Moral Volcano or whatever the student paper is, talking about the fact that George Bush was branding human beings as part of hazing activities at Delta Kappa Epsilon fraternity on Yale's campus?
Oh, yeah. Well, branding is a big thing within the whole frat scene, both black and white, you know, which is one of the reasons why I never joined, even though Kappa. Invited to join on several occasions. It's just, I think my ancestors worked too hard not to be branded, you know, and to willfully submit to that. Well, the whole fat thing to me is a lot of self-loathing and people who are basically narcissists and sado S&M fantasies. But,
Well, there's a lot of ugly fetishism that runs under the current of American popular culture. That's why in my conversation with Sandra, I brought up the business with Nicole Sandler, and you know, maybe I'm deadly in earnest. Maybe we can finally start having a real live, honest to God conversation about the sick, the twisted, the fetishistic things that go on every day in every prison in the United States of America.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the fact is, you know, we're a punishment culture. We're an S&M culture, whether we want to admit it or not. And it goes into, like you said, all facets of society. You know, what's his name? That black congressman from Florida, the black Republican congressman.
Oh, Alan West, yeah.
Yeah. If that is some closeted, deeply closeted homosexuality, nothing wrong with homosexual.
No, the hell is in the closet.
Yeah, the self-loathing closet of homosexuality stuff, I don't know what is. Well, to me, most black Republicans are is a deep seat of self-loathing there, you know. But
otherwise, it's rather difficult to be a Republican, right? You know, and black at the same time.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you have to have a great deal of self-loathing to basically join a party that fundamentally hates you. Hates your very existence. You know.
And that kind of leaves you in a spot.
Exactly. Or join any organization that hates your very existence. You know, it's like the gay guy who joined becomes Christian, like Ted Haggard. You know, eventually you're going to crack.
Yeah, well, it's like the Rhode Island state rep or whatever who made that nasty crack about legislation for Guatemalan gay men who like to smoke marijuana and was popped last weekend. Bill Murray would say, higher than a GB Jesus belt in Connecticut.
Yeah. But, you know, going on to the whole race thing, and, you know, this is part of, like, going back to that thing about Bush's mediocrity, or this thing where in America, if you're black and want to reach anywhere, you have to be three times as perfect. You know, this is one of the reasons why I left. I left. And because the thing is, I'm just as a human being as anybody else. And this is what, again, and I'm glad to be seeing this, you know, in some twisted way. Again, I have to say it again. I said on the show, this is a full.
It sort of justifies your decision, doesn't it?
Yeah, because here in China, that privilege doesn't happen here. It's either you can, you're qualified and you can do the job and you'll get a job. You know, if you did the work, you'll get the job.
Now,
it all goes. Yeah?
Go ahead. No, I was going to say there is some sort of Western versus Asian bias, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, if you're a foreigner, you know, yes, Chinese are xenophobic, but they're not hateful, racist, xenophobic. And they have good reason to be xenophobic. Opium war, you know, for one thing. You know, that's how they trusted foreigners. They got half the country high on opium and gave away like two-thirds of its wealth. So they have to respect your humanity, a common humanity. Okay, and that's the thing America is missing. You know, they don't even view Barack Obama as a full human being.
No.
Okay. Or black people of color. You know, we are in many of these teabag of views, lower priming.
Well, look at the photograph that was circulated by that white Republican political official in Orange County, California. Two chimpanzees dressed as humans with a little baby Obama being dandled on their knee.
And that's the core of the Tea Party.
Remember the New York Post editorial cartoon with the dead ape on the sidewalk?
Yeah. So, it's not even subliminal anymore. It's just blatantly out there now.
Yeah, that's subliminal doesn't count any longer.
Exactly. You know, and again, I don't get that. I haven't got that feeling in Korea or China. Yes, I've experienced some xenophobia, but I haven't got that feeling where they would, I guess, dehumanize me to that point. And that's why I love it out here, and that's why I don't think I can ever come back to America to live on a full-time basis ever again, because I refuse to go through not second-class citizens, but probably third or fourth, because I'm black and I come from an immigrant
family. And to be fair, it doesn't matter. Now, you know, maybe in another couple of generations, maybe in five, it doesn't matter. Yeah, maybe it'll be different then, but right now it doesn't matter what state in the union you are in. You're going to face that as a person of color wherever you are.
Well, you see, the thing is, people become less liberals when their jobs are threatened. It's easy to be a liberal when the economy is great and everybody's making money. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're still trying to fight over the Chicago School of Economics thing, which basically means divide and conquer by making the jobs and the money and that makes the society run scarce, because that promotes a lot of this racism. Okay, it really does. People are showing their really true colors when things are rare. You know.
You're not saying this, Kevin, with any degree of bitterness. You're not saying this with any animus. There's nothing hateful in the way you're delivering these remarks. These are observations of the sad facts of America
today
and for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, in the 70s when things were progressing, there were jobs to be had. Okay? When they get you so long in and the rest of that Chicago school bunch, and there was some kind of hope out there, but I guess I'm too young to remember, but from what was told to me, you know, to me by, like, the older generation, and it just became, you know, like, Black America has become a have-and-have-not society, and those who got jobs in the 70s up until, like, the 80s are doing well. My generation, the Generation X, who came through the first Bush recession, you know, Poppy Bush's recession, then, you know, my generation, those born from 1968 on, I was born in the 70s, we experienced two depressions.
Yeah.
You know, we experienced two economic depressions. I can't afford a third one. I'm in my 40s now. In China, every corner there's a gold dealer where I can go and buy gold bullion.
Wow.
Real money.
And I imagine they do a brisk business, right?
Oh, yes. I've been here a month, and I'm looking to buy some gold and silver bullion because that's going to be my savings. I am not putting my money on paper. I cannot afford to do it. And just lock it in a lockbox somewhere.
So, are you learning the language? I mean, you went from Korea to
try.
Yeah,
I'm picking up a few things.
Ain't easy, right?
No, but I guess the more you live out here, I tell you one thing: China, people will say, "Well, this is a communist country. My freedom is whatever." That's a load of malarkey. The only thing I had to do with the Chinese government is register with the local police as a foreigner. My freedom was more hindered in South Korea, a place where we have the U.S. troops stationed up the Yin Yang, where we're supposedly defending their democracy now, than it ever was here in China. So, you know, don't buy into what the media says.
I kind of quit doing that a long time ago, Kevin. If the for-profit media says that there's bright blue sky outside, I'm taking an umbrella.
Yes, you know, it's just my freedom hasn't been hindered one bit. Obviously, I'm talking to you. I'm saying what I want to say. You know, I'm getting on to, I'm updating on Facebook. Yeah, you have to do a few things like put your own VPN in. So what? You know,
but that's not against the law.
It's not against the law. And, you know, like anything in society, you know, yeah, respect the country and respect the government. And you know what? I do respect the Chinese government because it's a government that works for the most part. Okay, now, you have to understand, I live in Shanghai. I live in the biggest city in the world. And, you know, there's rural China and then there's urban China. And urban China is where the privilege lives. So I haven't seen much of rural China yet. So I don't know the differences or whatever.
Well, you know, one of the things that we hear a lot about, Kevin, and I'll just go ahead and ask you, we hear a lot about China's, you know, China burns a lot of coal, China buys a lot of coal. But by the same token, that they're moving as fast as they possibly can to get to renewable energy.
You're absolutely spot on. I live in a green building.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, I live in a green zone, green building. They have trees planted all over the place, alternative. And, you know, the lights go off when not in use. Even, like, their electronics now, it's green technology. Like, the TV goes off. It has a sensor with a timer. The TV goes off when nobody's sitting in front of it. So all that stuff is there. My girlfriend, who I'm living with now, she went on a trip, and along the way, you see the windmills all along the highway.
See, I was wondering about that, if you were seeing the wind energy development. Oh, you know, and that's so interesting because
among other things, if you start talking about wind energy like here in West Virginia, well, you know what? The technology's just, maybe it'll be ready in another million years, but right now we just got to keep burning that coal because the technology's just not available.
Well, that's, I don't know. You know, it's like, what's that saying? You cannot get a guy to see the truth, especially when his living is dependent on the lie existing.
Right, right.
You know, that's all I can say about that one. But, it, you know, it's an amazing place, and it's, you can understand why. It's been around for 5,000-6,000 years, and God willing, it'll be around for another 6,000-7,000 years.
Oh, no, I mean, I know... I got to get better at the geography and stuff. I'll be going and playing with Google Earth after the program, after this phone call, Kevin.
Yeah.
But I don't know where the museum is, but I'd be going and finding those terracotta soldiers like yesterday and just kind of standing there and going, shit. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't, and that's the sad thing. I've been here like a month and a week or two, about 6 or 7 weeks now. No, like 5 weeks. And we haven't done the tourist thing yet because, you know, we're just settling in. Just to get to know my neighborhood, which is a beautiful neighborhood. And to live in an apartment like this in Manhattan, I would have to be making at least $100,000 a year. Not even $200,000, even in Brooklyn.
So it's, you're not in some little tiny the fourth-story walk-up efficiency?
No, absolutely not. This apartment would easily in New York City, and I'm talking a bad area in New York City, you know, not the wealthiest of areas, can go for $3,000-$4,000 a month.
Wow.
Easily. You know, it's, you know, and again, I don't mean to brag or rub things in, but this is what happened.
How are the winters?
Well, I would say Shanghai is equivalent to like the coastal city of Charleston or Savannah. It looks like it because they have a lot of palmetto trees all around. It's a beautiful city, and it's very clean. And I guess it's the weather accordingly. Yes, they have the balmy summers and all that, and the winters can get a bit cold. You know, I came in on the very tail end of winter, and it's already starting to heat up for spring because we had a couple of 80-degree days here. Or, I should go metric, 30 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, see, you go metric and you lose me.
Yeah.
I gotta get with the 21st century one of these days. And actually, I used to be able to convert it in my head, but I can't anymore.
Yeah,
I can still do kilograms to pounds and vice versa, and I can do the kilometers to miles, but I get lost. Because there's like something about carrying the 5 and multiplying by the age of your mother-in-law, and I can't do the temperature.
I just approximate. Like day before yesterday, it was like almost 90, the equivalent to 90.
Oh, it may get a little toasty there come July, Kevin.
Oh yeah, they said be prepared, but you know they have AC there, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, man, it may sound crazy, but I was wondering about you the other day. And apparently, I managed to conjure you.
I sent you an email. I don't know if you received it, but I did send you an email saying, you know, I'm going and once I get internet set up.
Yeah, I got the I'm going email, but I figured there was not much point to replying since you were going.
But I didn't know, you know, like you, I was facing all, you know, censorship and all this stuff, you know.
Well, if you're able to listen to this there, I think that speaks volumes.
Exactly, my brother.
All right, well, Kevin, have a wonderful evening, and just glad to know you're okay, brother.
Morning, Todd.
All right, you take care. Enjoy yourself.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
From Shanghai. That's our buddy Kevin, formerly of Seoul, formerly of Brooklyn. Kevin gets around. It sounds like he's found some place he finally likes. Hey, welcome to the program.
I think you broke a record tonight.
How so?
Three blacks in a row.
I ain't counting.
I think you broke a record, man. Well, that's all good.
Hey, maybe I can get the fill-in.
Start us up a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe I can get the fill-in gig with Mark Thompson or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it got us all riled up, man. Wow. But anyway, that's fine. I'm glad.
But I think he's got a lot. I think he's got a lot more than the black folks worked up.
No, I'm just saying. He got some black folks worked up. Trust me, I can tell you that for sure. Yeah, he got some black people worked up, man. You know, what are we talking about here? We're talking about hostage takers and carnival barkers. Hostage takers and carnival barkers, Bob. I think that's what we're dealing with here. You know.
Yeah.
We're dealing with.
And yet tomorrow morning, the story will be about people being called hostage takers and carnival barkers, as opposed to whether or not they actually are. And if there's any sort of takeaway from tonight's show, Gary, it's, you know, I've been disgusted with the for-profit media for a long time. You know that. Everybody listens to this program knows that. But I don't think I have ever been more disgusted by a long shot than I was today. I mean, sitting there watching Savannah Guthrie and Chuck Todd and we're coming back with full live team 24/7 coverage of Barack Obama's birth certificate right after this press release from Donald Trump.
Well, the only thing that may throw your carnival barker theory off is that we got the wedding coming up. So you may have like 2 days where it, you know, it's coming on that back end, you know, it's like when that Tiger Woods story came out, it came and knocked some stuff off the front page. So maybe maybe that'll knock it off for a day, and maybe that'll be just enough to put it to, it's not going to be put to rest, obviously, but maybe, they try to eventually move on to something else.
Well, the for-profit media has been pushing that hard. I mean, bless her little heart, Mika Brzezinski appears to be largely disgusted at the fact that she got dragged off to England for this. And by the way, that's we're not calling it the royal order. We're calling it that thing in England.
Well, I'm pretty sure you're not into royalty. I just have this sneaky suspicion that you're just not into that whole scene. You know, am I wrong?
Oh, no, you're spot on. I mean, I loved because they're trying so hard. You know, British Airways has bought advertising on MSNBC, and you've heard a lot about Great Britain in the last couple of weeks. Well, the next time, see it for yourself and get there on British Airways. Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, I have my issues with our so-called founding fathers. But the one thing I say, maybe they were right to get the hell out of there. But you know, that's a whole nother discussion. But you know, this whole thing with the hostage takers and carnival barkers. You know, one thing I was thinking about that, you know, and I kind of said this last time I called. I think sometimes, I think I'm probably maybe the only person who maybe understands Barack Obama's 11th. Game of chess, as you're calling it, or whatever.
11-dimensional.
Dimensional chess. Because you know, just back, I remember years ago when I read on The Art of War, and I watched this campaign, all those other things. How you use, you know, time as a weapon, or you use certain things that you don't put out a lot of effort when you're fighting, but you're actually fighting. So that's kind of like, you know, you use, you know, kind of ancillary things to do the work for you. And Obama has done that a lot, pretty much throughout, I've noticed throughout his campaign. He still does it through the media and stuff like that. And my point being is that I think that what happens a lot of times is, and I think this goes with both sides, it's not the media, but even on the left, that I notice that he'll come out and say pretty much what probably is just the facts. And people just don't accept it as what really is what he's saying. Because today, when he came out today, you know, I saw it live. I don't usually see a lot of stuff live. I said, I'm going to just watch this. And he came out and said, you know, first he came out and made a joke about, you know, the whole, that the media won't follow, you know, national security issues or whatever with Chuck Todd. But what he really started talking about was, and you know, you saw the press conference, he started saying that it's taking away the issues from the whole thing about the budget. Because that's the conversation he wants to have, because right now you're having people blowing up at town halls at Republicans. Republicans are blowing up. And that really probably should be the story, which would be very advantageous to the Democrats. So, to some degree, when he comes out and says, okay, well, I'm going to finally do this birth certificate, maybe this is just what he said it is. He wants to move the story to talking about this budget because it's a losing argument for Republicans. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it is just that. I don't know if we sometimes just get into, like, well, what was, why did the White House did this and this and that? He came out and said why they did it. And I, to me, that's,
yeah, and while, you
know, I mean, sometimes we just have to accept that.
Sure. And I mean, it is what it is. And nobody, you know, I didn't get a call before the press conference or anything. Hey, Bob, we heard you want to be the Jesus Barack guy. What do you think? No, I didn't get that call, Gary. And you're right. It is what it is. But, my greater frustration is with what I perceive in them as really not understanding who and what they're dealing with. I mean,
they understand, Bob. Trust me, they understand what they're dealing with.
Well, do they? I mean, Bob, no. Honest to God, Gary, how many Bubbas are there in, and I use that term lovingly in this context. How many Bubbas are there in the cabinet? How many Bubba advisors are there? I mean, you've got a lot more contact with D.C. than I do, but every time I'm there, I see these well-heeled, you know, the United States runs on the labor, the government at least, runs on the labor of 24-year-olds. And they're all very well-spoken, and you know, there's probably not a one of them knows what, you know, whether one should order grit or grits.
Yeah, I would say this too.
And thing is, this is the kind of mean-spiritedness that is the worst of Bubba-ness, and it takes a Bubba to counter it.
Yeah, well, that's why Clinton was so good. But this is the thing about Washington, and you know, this is an overarching thing. I'm not gonna get like into anything detailed real quick, but it's a very processed place. I lived in New York for many years, and I worked, you know, in a certain, a very fast, you know. Type of industry when I was in advertising marketing. And so when I came to D.C., and you know, as you know, I've worked on some government contracts, even the Army. I was an Army contractor for a while. Worked them, not, you know, in terms of more of marketing and advertising side. And I remember when I first worked in that county years ago that I literally sit in my office 3 months waiting for a response from them on a project. I literally didn't have anything to do for 3 months. The point I'm trying to make is that with the government, it can be very inefficient. It can be very efficient. In other words, they got the certain pieces in place, the people in place to do the certain right thing, but it's very slow. And a lot of times when I see the people criticizing Obama about a lot of things, the reason why I take an issue with sometimes, not so much the direction Obama takes, but being that I know the process because I've worked as a contractor, even for NASA and other contracts here, is that they do everything slow here. Very, very slow. It's not even that they're not really competent. They're just very slow about it. They have to have a meeting about a meeting about a meeting. You know, and they have to go to lunch about it, and they got to talk about it. And trust me, when I first came here, it drove me crazy because I was in New York for so long, and I was used to just doing stuff, and let's move to the next thing. So my point is, if you look at every argument, let's say the public option, Obama had, when he first came into this, Bob, he said, I want to have this thing done by what? Before the summer. But who dragged the damn thing out? The Senate. They dragged it out again. That's one example. Let's look at another example. This recent budget, okay? Well, there was a draft of the budget done in February 2010 that Obama put out. Who dragged it out, okay? The Democrats, because they didn't want to talk about it. They didn't, you know, they were running for re-election and this thing, but they dragged it out. My point is that I think what Obama has been, what I'm pretty sure I know this because I know some people, is that he's frustrated about how slow they move. He can't get stuff through fast enough, and when you can't get stuff through fast enough, the Republicans gives them traction to do things. Republicans, like when Tom DeLay was in there, stuff went through so fast, man, and he would hold the meetings over and over and over and have you there till the end of the night because he wanted that stuff passed because he didn't want the American people to get a hold of what they're doing. So that's really the biggest issue that Obama has been facing, is that Washington basically is just too slow for him. And it's too slow. And I'm not giving no excuses, Obama. What I'm saying is that if you go back and look at all these processes that he has to go through trying to pass this legislation, whether it's health care, whether it's the budget, or whatever, is that Washington is just so slow. Yeah, that's the young people here. They're an issue, too, because some of them are very neutral. They're not as as you say, probably learned about the world and how things.
Well, work. They're trying to climb through the bureaucracy because you get high enough, and there's some real folding money to be made.
Yeah. That's.
And you may be, working for a moderate Republican today, and get an offer from an absolute fire-breathing right-wing troglodyte the next. I mean, isn't that how it works?
Crossbreeding. Yes, a lot of crossbreeding.
I mean, there's not a talent pool of young freaks and a talent pool of young liberals, and doesn't quite work like that, does it?
Well, I would question this whole thing because Maryland and D.C. area is very liberal. I mean, even though they may not say it, they're very liberal. You know, we have a very strong gay community here. Maybe even if it's under culture and even in the political.
Moses! Speaking of which, Gary, have you followed any of that awful, awful business that happened at that McDonald's in Baltimore?
Which one? No, I didn't hear about this one. About the fist fight, the fighting.
Well, a 22-year-old transgendered woman was knocked to the ground and repeatedly punched and kicked in a McDonald's until she went into a seizure.
Yeah, I heard something about it, but I didn't follow. I mean, I saw like a clip. I didn't.
Oh, God Almighty! A McDonald's. It was a McDonald's employee. I mean, this is one of those things. This is one of those moments out of the Bible, with the Good Samaritan and stuff. A McDonald's employee taped it all, or video recorded it all. Other people in the room were egging the two girls on who were doing the two teenage girls who were doing this to the young transgendered woman, egging her on. A 50-something granny tried to make them stop. They punched her, and then the McDonald's employee eventually put it up on YouTube. Then it was kicked off YouTube, and he put it up on a hip hop site and commented that it was okay what happened to the TG girl. Because she was a man in girl's clothing.
Well, they had another fight out in Florida. I think it was down someplace in Florida, similar breakout about. That's where part of that came from, because there was another fight of some bikini, they call it bikini club. This woman was in a bikini down in Florida doing the fighting. That's how I kind of cross-referenced it and saw it. But, things are just basic.
Well, it's kind of like what I was talking with Kevin. Ain't nowhere safe in this country, no matter how liberal you may think you are.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but like I said, D.C. area and this other area, I mean, these other areas around here, I mean, I can go just about anywhere in D.C. or anywhere in Maryland. I mean, Maryland's probably the most, I think Barack Obama's favorability rating is probably, I think Maryland is one of the highest in terms of I guess because of the Democratic base being strong, but it's very, very high. Here in Maryland, for the Democrats and in general, and I don't really run across a lot of, let me say, hardcore.
Yeah, Maryland gave us Maryland gave us Michael Steele and has since repented.
Yeah, well, he lives in my district. I see him every now and then when he's in this area because he was he's the lieutenant governor here, and he's a clown.
I remember how he was gonna make the Republican Party hip. I mean, Does he like give gang sign or anything when you see him? I mean, God, I'm ashamed.
That website called rightonyourbehind.com. Remember that? Now you talk about a carnival barker, but the only thing I was gonna say about this whole thing about the media, Bob, though, I would say to one thing to be wary of: there's carnival barkers everywhere, and we talk about the mainstream media. I think there's a lot of people out here. Who, I was thinking about Arrington Huffington. I was never really that crazy about her. But, I had been noticing, and I think I sent you an article on her when she was getting ready. They were thinking about hiring, Breitbart or whatever. Did you
mm-hmm.
see that email I sent?
Yeah.
What was that about?
This
guy.
Well,
disproven.
Yeah, but.
How are you thinking?
No, but I mean, but where freaks like Breitbart are concerned. There's a lot of what were they thinking. Whose news program was he on recently and had no... It was maybe last week somebody called and said that, guess who Tom Hartman had on his show today? Breitbart?
I think he had him on one time before. He's had them on one. I've heard.
There was some even higher profile, and somebody will send me an email in a minute, and we'll clear it all up. But, you know, to sit there and legitimize that thug, and I mean, he is. He's a thug.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think.
But where Ariana's concerned, you know, she's just, you know, I mean, she's a. You know, she's an album title. We're only in it for the money. When you sell out to AOL, you know, it's pretty much done at that point.
Well, first of all, she used to be a conservative, number one. That should have been the fourth
right.
flag. And she was married to a Republican. So it's like, wait a minute, you're married to a Republican. You know, but my point was that, again, it's another carnival barker. I mean, she came out and was so like on Bill Maher and all these other things. I want to create some independent where we can get independent news that's free from distortion. See, the thing is, you know, the one thing I respect, I mean, I agree with you on some issues in terms of, like, you know, Christianity. We're obviously miles apart from that. Or, you know, but in general, I respect the fact that you are doing something that's as best you can pure for now until you can monetize it to a better way that's not influenced by corporate America. And that's how she came off to me. You know, the same thing with Malloy. You guys are doing something that hopefully keeps you, you know, filtered from being persuaded that way.
You know, and I got to tell you, I blushed about 16 colors of purple Friday night when Mike said all those nice things about my family. I was just blown away. It was so kind and so decent what he said. And I, you know, when you talk about Mike and Kathy and little Molly, you're talking about three of the most gracious human beings that I've ever known. And
you know, I followed Mike ever since. He was at iAmerica, and he was somewhere in Chicago. I mean,
He was at WLS. I mean, and kicking butt and taking names, but he just wouldn't quit. He wouldn't quit being mean to the Republicans, and that'll cost you.
It will cost you. But the thing is that there's still a lot of carnival barkers out here. And
well, yeah, no, you raise a really, really good point with that, Gary, because, it's another one of those dangers of what happens when the for-profit media get all over something. You know, according as far as the for-profit media are concerned right now, the only person who's ever said a daggum thing about birtherism is Donald Trump. Where's the call out for Rush Limbaugh? He's been honking on that damn dog whistle for 2 years.
But NBC's ratings are going up, you know, for their shows. I mean,
right, what you're pointing to is why I call it, you know, because a lot of people use that phrase mainstream media, horse feathers. I call it the for-profit.
Everybody's burned out on Palin. They saturated Palin to death. I mean, MSNBC is just as bad as the rest of them. It's probably maybe even worse because they created her. I mean, Palin, I was like, after the election, I was like, why are they even talking about her now? The election's over. They didn't win. She ain't saying anything that's enlightening and, you know, whatever.
She quit her job.
She quit her job, exactly. So she would never be ever to run for president because once you leave a sitting office, you will never, ever get another a upgrade from doing something like that. She would never be allowed to become president.
To expand on the profit nature, you know, it was Susan early in the program who said, you know, maybe we ought to make all these little freaks wear a big scarlet P on their suits and stuff, you know, for profit. The reason I call it the for-profit media, Gary, is not that there's anything wrong with people making a living. I'd like to someday. I don't know that I ever will, but I'd like to. But I don't begrudge people their pay for what they do. But at this point in time, it is so transparently obvious that everything that happens in what is called by other people mainstream media is profit-driven. It's not information-driven. It's not dedication to the First Amendment-driven. It's not people's right to know-driven or Fourth Estate-driven. It is driven by the urge to create something that will make enough money to pay off shareholders. And when you take something as precious as public information and you subject it to the profit motive, I object to that every bit as much as I object to taking you and your family's health and well-being or mine and subjecting it to the profit motive. It's obscene in and of itself.
Yeah, and you know what the thing is, Bob? I remember I used to tell somebody, I was talking one time, was at this photo shoot, and I was telling this person, I said, you know, I used to always love to listen to AM radio, and not over FM, and you know, one of the account people, they said, why? I said, because I felt like it always come in like real straggly, like you can barely hear it, but I felt like the person who's got that radio station is really trying to get that music to me. In other words, they really love it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
and you know, you listen to AM radio,
show here.
And you know, you're driving across country and you're going on the AM band, and you can catch little local flickering candle flames along the way, and Here's some pimply-faced kid who's 15 years old, and tonight in the news, and we'll be back to your music. You know, just trying to learn the trade, learn the craft. There's something that grabs you about that.
Exactly. It's just like with you. You're trying to share information. You put the lectures up. You know, so you're trying to share some information. You're doing it because you love it. So people donate because they know that there's something that you love to do. We love what you're trying to do because we appreciate the information. So it's a give back to give back. The problem is I have with the mainstream media, as you say, is that it's, you know, and I see this sometimes. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. We were like, yeah, sometimes even when you go out in D.C. now, you feel like, you know, these people want to charge you all these things. It's just, it's about money now. It's not about because they want to entertain you.
Well, how can, yeah, exactly. How can you look?
What you're doing.
Specifically today, Gary. How can you look at the editorial decisions that were obviously made on TV in particular today, but it'll be all over the print media by tomorrow. They're just a day behind. They can't help it. It works that way. But look at the editorial decisions that were made today. Look at the stories that I mentioned and that Susan mentioned and that Sandra mentioned that were not covered, that were shoved to the back, that were given short shrift. I mean, if I was the family member of any of those 9 Americans killed in Afghanistan today, I would be out on the street walking, trying to find the editor that put Donald Trump ahead of my loved one being blown to bits by an Afghan pilot. I would so not be okay. You know, I mean, it's infuriating.
Well, why don't they just come out and say, and even in media, why don't they just come out and say, the reason why we're in Afghanistan, because everybody pick up a map and point and look where the damn thing is. It's right in the middle. And what do you want to, what is the lifeline of any oil system?
The pipelines.
A pipeline.
Sure.
It's like your heart. It's the vein.
But I mean, just to go back for a second, you know, those editorial decisions were made today to put all of those stories, not even on the back burner. They came all the way off the stove, Gary. And those decisions, there is no credible argument that can be made by anybody in the editorial decision-making process than that those decisions were made solely and exclusively for the purpose of making a profit. You know, it's the same thing with Morning Joe being in the London. They could cover it as well from their studios in Hackensack.
Well, everybody wants the UK because the dollar's falling, so they want to get in with the UK thing. They're trying to build up a model over there too. I mean, that's what that's about. We know all that. But no, what I was saying about the pipeline, the reason why I was saying that is that the media does not want to tell us just the basic truth, because they tell us the basic truth and it's like, oh, okay, so now we know. So therefore, we can't make any rational decision. They want to keep us in an enigma of what's going on in the world so that they can continue to run abstract stories to us. If they tell us everything that we are doing, you know what I'm saying, make it plain, like Malcolm used to do, just tell us what we're doing over there, then we can just make a decision. But they don't do that. I mean, we all know that Saddam Hussein didn't have any weapons, and even if he had a nuclear weapon, if he launched anything out of freaking Iraq, France, who else? Israel, Turkey. They would have blew that whole damn country out of the place. But the media went around, oh, maybe he does have nuclear weapons, all this stuff. Everybody knew Bob, but the media went along with it. And it's really, to me, that war, the Iraq war, was the biggest failure of media, probably in the 21st century, without a doubt. Because everybody knew that he did not have those damn weapons, yet they allowed the American government to lie to us.
Bingo.
It's just
bingo.
It's that simple.
Great conversation, Gary. I got to roll, but don't be a stranger. And I mean, no, we've been all over the board, and this has been a dandy.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Ciao. Have a good evening.
Bye now. And my apologies to the other four blinking lights. Got through a bunch of calls tonight, though. That was pretty cool. Email coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, black folks. Bob, be proud. Listen to the other progressive talk shows, and you'll notice the dearth of people of color that call in, and heaven forbid they have a black guest. I never thought about it in those particular terms. But yeah, okay. Everybody needs to be part of this conversation. Black, brown, yeah, screw the colors. This is just our conversation. And frankly, I'm humbled and moved every time I see that, you know, we're going to make it to the next month. A gentle reminder before we do go, I checked with Ben Birch. He's still trying to fundraise for what needs to happen to keep things afloat at whiterosesociety.org. Remember, you know, Ben isn't just doing the horn. He's doing a lot of other stuff too, and it matters. It all matters and needs a little help from time to time, and we'll never, you know, never, he's never charged, he's never, nothing. It's just there. Never sends a bill, which is the way the horn operates. I want to thank you because in the last 24 hours, we went from being $1,000 out from our fundraising goal for the month of April, which is the same as the fundraising goal for March, February, January. It's what it takes to pay the bills. We went from being $1,000 out to being $900 out. And slow and steady wins the race. We've got three more days after tonight to try to get to the goal. Any help you can give is fine. We're talking about 90 people giving $10 each. And we'll be very close to the Thrifty 250 actually being coming to fruition. So thank you very kindly, both for what you have done, what you do, and what you will do. Because as I said in a note today, I understand, and we all understand, that every penny that goes toward keeping all of this going is a penny hard-earned and a penny hard to part with. So thank you. Thank you in advance. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. To our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, at headonradionetwork.com. A quick mention. I mentioned it last night. Let me mention it again. Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once over to cassie@college.com. That's C-A-S-S-I-E at A-T, college, you know, .com. I had a reminder here in my email saying, talking about how wonderful her latest piece is over there. Jay and Yuma reminded me. Go over to cassie@college.com and read her essay, her blog post on secondhand kids. It's powerful. It's powerful. And it reminds me why we all know so thoroughly well that Cassie is going to be a big success in this world. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Thanks to John Fox and Ben Birch, and always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.